So this is work that was actually primarily done by my graduate student, or my former PhD student, Zi Lin, as his thesis work. When I got the email that said that this paper had been accepted, I went to congratulate him on having a paper accepted at USENIX. It was the first time I've ever seen someone look unhappy about that. He said, I screwed up. I just screwed up. Oh, I told my fiance she could schedule our wedding in China for the same day. Okay, I guess you can go to China and get married. But you have to invite me. Oh, wait. So all the good ideas in this talk are Z's, and all the mistakes I make are mine. Okay, so this is really a paper about how we should evaluate the security of these network flow watermarking schemes. And so in order to describe that, first I need to describe what a network flow watermarking scheme is. Okay, so in a network flow watermarking scheme, we're concerned with these network flows, which are sequences of packets that emerge from a sender like Alice here, go into the network, and eventually wind up at a recipient like Pinocchio. Or this flow of packets that originate from Bob, go into the network, and eventually emerge from the network at Arthur, down here in the corner. Okay. And in a network flow watermarking scheme, we pretend that some of these, these networks are made up of routers, and some of these routers are somehow in cahoots. They're cooperating with each other, and routers that see these packets ending up at Pinocchio and Arthur want to figure out whether these are, in fact, the packets that originated at Alice or Bob, okay? And of course, you say, well, that's easy. I just look at the headers of these packets, and they say they're from Alice, and they're going to Pinocchio, or they say they're from Bob, and they're going to Arthur. But of course, sometimes flows of packets leave one host, go through something else in the network, which is not their final destination, and then show up at a different place later. For example, there could be a VPN in between that's transiting some of the links in between Alice and Pinocchio, or there could be an SSH tunnel between Alice and some node in the network, which then forwards them to Pinocchio. It's being used as a stepping stone to launch an attack. Or there could be something like Tor. So there could be something in the middle of the network which is encrypting or decrypting or re-encrypting these packets. So you can't just read who the ultimate source and the ultimate destination of the packets is. Okay, so a network flow watermarking scheme is trying to figure out which flows are associated with which sources and destinations, even if some of this transformation is going on. You might say, oh, that's still easy because I can just look at the sizes. Encryption doesn't change the sizes. But of course, that could be countered by using some kind of padding. You say, oh, that's easy. It's still easy because I can just look at the rates. Everyone knows that if the rates match up, you can do this correlation attack. Unfortunately, that can be worked around by having sort of uniform rates of flows to make it hard to match those up. So if you remove all of those possible ways of figuring out that two flows are really the same flow, then what you're left with is a situation in which you might want to apply network flow watermarking. And what can you do? Well, if the flows are all uniform rate and encrypted, so they can't be linked and padded out to the same volume, it seems like the only thing you can do is start to manipulate the flows so that you can recognize them again later. And since they're encrypted, and we'll assume that the encryption was done competently, But the only thing you can manipulate is the timing. So you can start playing with the times that these packets are released into the network from the router that sees them originating at Alice or Bob. Okay, so that's what a network flow watermarking scheme is. It's a scheme that manipulates the timing of packets in a flow so that later on those packets can be recognized by their timing characteristics. Okay, and this is kind of a dual use tool, right? You might be using it as a good guy who's trying to identify an attack that's going through a stepping stone, or you might be using it as someone who wants to, you know, identify things that are going in and into and out of the Tor network, in which case we might call you a bad guy. Okay. All right, so that's the idea of a network flow watermarking scheme. There's been dozens of these, at least in the literature. Let's think about, you know, like I said, this talk and the paper sort of about how we should evaluate the security of these schemes. So what kind of requirements would you have for a network flow watermarking scheme? Well, first of all, you'd like it to be hard to remove one of these marks once it's put into a flow. And you'd also like it to be the case that it's unlikely for one of these marks to show up in a flow that you didn't mark. Why should it be unlikely to occur? Well, if things show up as marked that never went through the watermarker, then that makes it hard for you to say that this thing came from Alice or Bob, right? Because it could just as likely not. And why should it be hard to remove? Well, of course, when things go through the network, their timing characteristics aren't exactly preserved because there's going to be things like delays, jitter, etc. Okay. So what should it mean for a watermark to be hard to remove? So it should at least be robust to this kind of natural network jitter that's going to happen as these streams go through the network. Okay. You'd like it, actually, it'd be great if it was hard to remove adversarially, too, right? I mean, if there's nothing that SSH relay in the middle can do to remove this mark, then that's great. I can always identify the mark coming back out. But that seems sort of hard to achieve for a watermarking scheme, because I could always, if I know that you're marking my packets, the relay can always sort of renormalize the timing in between packets as they pass through, right? Okay, so if I can't make my scheme hard to remove adversarially, a recent idea in network flow watermarking schemes is that I can at least try to make it hard to detect that I'm inserting these marks in the first place. So the adversary, the SSH relay, for example, will never try to renormalize the packet timings because they won't think that there's anything funny going on. Okay, so it's a recent idea since I guess maybe 3 or 4 years ago in network flow watermarking schemes to try to design schemes that are invisible to that relay in the middle. Okay, and so what we are looking at in this talk is what should it mean for a watermarking scheme to be invisible. Okay, so if we go and take a look at schemes in the literature, we read these very nice papers that describe these very clever watermarking schemes. How do I put marks into these flows? And then one thing that you always have to do in a security paper is, you know, evaluate how invisible is your network watermark. And so the way that these schemes are evaluated, usually, is that the authors find a plausible source of data about how flows in a network usually look, like a KEDA data set or timing some stuff that went through Tor or something like that. Okay. And then they insert a watermark by their scheme, or insert many watermarks to their scheme. I repeat the experiment a whole bunch of times. And then they look at the statistical distribution of these timings before, and look at the statistical distribution of these timings after. And, you know, they do some kind of statistical testing, Kolmogorov Smirnov or chi squared something, and they say, oh, look, statistically these distributions are the same, so it's probably hard to tell that that this mark is being inserted. Okay, so if you think about that from a cryptographic point of view, and you try to sort of model this as a crypto kind of game, what we've got is we've got this warden or relay who's trying to figure out if these flows are marked. And what's happening is, in the game, a flow is chosen according to some typical distribution. It goes through the inserting router. Then the warden sees the flow. And of course, there's either the flow gets marked or it doesn't get marked, and some jitter is added to it. And then the warden sees the flow. And then the warden is supposed to try to guess, okay, was that flow marked or not? Okay, and so when we evaluate compare these two distributions, that's what we're doing. That's kind of the game that we're simulating, okay? But if you think of this sort of in terms of cryptography, this is a lot like evaluating a cipher under a ciphertext-only attack, right? Some kind of plain text that I don't know is getting encrypted, and now I'm supposed to figure out what's going on with the ciphertext, okay? And we've seen lots of examples in crypto of problems with these kind of ciphertext-only attack notions, ciphertext-only security notions. And so one thing that Z and I were interested in is, okay, is there analogous problems that come up with this kind of passive attack model for network flow watermarks? Okay, so what are some of the problems? Well, if I evaluate the security of my watermark under some kind of assumption of a typical distribution, well, if the distribution of traffic changes, then I have no guarantee about the security under this new distribution of traffic, right? Just like if I evaluate my ciphering scheme under the assumption that I'm going to encrypt English with it, if I later start encrypting German with it, I have no guarantees that the same security properties are going to hold. Okay, and so in crypto, the way we've started to deal with, the way we came up of dealing with modeling this situation is by having chosen plaintext attacks, right? Where instead of having plaintext be chosen according to some arbitrary distribution, they're chosen from a distribution controlled by the adversary, right? Okay, and so the first kind of set of problems that I'm going to talk about are related to changing the model in this way. So we're sort of contending that you should evaluate the security of a network flow watermark under what we call a chosen flow attack, okay? A sort of more active kind of attacker model in which the warden chooses the flow, okay? Then hands it to the marking router. The router either inserts the mark or doesn't, and then jitter gets added to the flow, and then the warden sees that flow and is supposed to decide, okay, was there a watermark inserted in that flow or not? Okay, all right. So that is the sort of model that we're proposing to use to evaluate schemes, and then a big part of the paper is, and if you think about it, by the way, this is very natural for a lot of the settings that I just described, for example. Well, in almost all the situations these attacks would be applied, these watermarks would be applied, the relay and the initiator of the flow are cooperating. So the initiator can tell the relay, this is the distribution on traffic I'm going to use. We're going to agree that I'm going to send a packet every 5 milliseconds or something like that, right? So it's kind of a natural thing to think of anyways. Okay. And another reason to think about this is, think about things this way is because it might expose, certain kinds of distributions which would be problematic even under a flow only attack. Okay. So so to see some examples of how this can happen, we looked at two recent network flow watermarking schemes, and we designed chosen flow attacks, and then we generalized those to known flow attacks, okay, or flow-only attacks. Okay, and so I'm going to describe these two chosen flow attacks, and we'll, if you're interested in reading about the generalizations to the known flow attacks, you can see the paper. Okay, so one of the schemes that we designed a chosen flow attack against, or chosen flow attack against, is Rainbow. Okay, Rainbow is a intended to be invisible watermark flow watermarking scheme. It was published at NDSS 09. And Rainbow is what's called a non-blind scheme. So the inserting router and the detecting router communicate with each other through this interpacket delay database. Okay, so there's a couple extra, or there's a sort of an extra entity involved in Rainbow. Okay, so the way Rainbow works is you've got this sender, originator of a flow. It sends some packets through the network. They end up at the watermarking router. Okay, and these packets have times T1, T2, T3, all with a little uppercase U in them. Okay, and the watermarker computes the interpacket delays, tau1, tau2, tau3, which is just the time differences between the origination times, and sends that inter-packet delay schedule to the IPD database, and they get logged. And then the watermarker also inserts the watermark. How does the watermark get inserted? Well, the watermarker delays all the packets a little bit, and then starts randomly adding a little bit of extra delay, or subtracting a little bit of extra delay between packets. So the amplitude of the watermark is a parameter to the scheme, A, and so the watermark is either 1 or 0, plus A or minus A, gets added to each interpacket delay, okay? Then the network adds some jitter, and then this flow later shows up at the detector. And so the detector, when he wants to decide, so by the way, the watermark is secret, shared between the watermark and the detector. And so the detector gets this flow later, the received flow, and wants to decide, okay, is the received flow the same as the flow that the watermarker saw? So he retrieves, first computes the interpacket delays of the received flow. And if it's the same as the sent flow, then it's these interpacket delays are the user's interpacket delays plus the watermark values plus some jitter. So he queries the IPD database, gets the original interpacket delays from the user, and then you can subtract out the original interpacket delays, and if the flows are the same, you know, the interpacket delays should look a lot like the watermark plus A or minus A in the right places. Technically, this is described as computing the inner product of the watermark with the difference between these things, and there's some kind of threshold. If it's greater than that threshold, we say that the flow is marked. Okay. So that's how Rainbow works. How does our chosen flow attack work? Well, our chosen flow attack works by looking at what happens when the attacker can compute the jitter on the flow that arrives at the receiver. Okay. So because the attacker knows the interpacket delays. Okay. Because the attacker knows the interpacket delays, he can compute the jitter. And this jitter, by the way, is usually modeled as a Laplace distribution, so it's kind of very concentrated around zero. So if you add a watermark to it of a magnitude which is comparable to the shape distribution of the shape parameter of the Laplace distribution, you're going to take things that are concentrated around zero and move them far away from zero, essentially. And so you end up with a jitter distribution that looks like this orange histogram, if you take the absolute values of the jitter distributions, instead of this blue histogram. Okay, and so you can, in fact, just by looking at the smallest bin in the histogram, tell very reliably whether a fluff has been watermarked or not. If the amplitude of the watermark is, like I said, comparable to the shape parameter of the Laplace distribution, then you end up having like 100% true positives and 0% false positives. Okay, and like I said, if you go and read our paper, we have an example of where we generalize that to a flow that works assuming a limited watermark size, an attack that works without having a chosen flow. We also attack this other scheme called Swirl. I'm not going to have time to go into many of the details of our attack on Swirl. But the way Swirl works, and it was published at NDSS 2011, the way Swirl works is based on intervals, which means that instead of looking at the delays between packets to figure out if a flow is marked, it looks at whether there are packets in certain time intervals. Okay. The details of how those are chosen is not important because I'm not going to talk about that attack, but it works really well. And now I'm going to switch over to one other thing that we wanted to talk about, which only happens when you, so I don't know if you guys looked at the doorknobs in your room, you've got this lever that says turn to engage privacy. So I'm going to switch over to privacy-only mode and talk about attacks that, anonymous routing networks could conduct on these watermarks, okay? And these are kind of active attacks that involve manipulating the watermark, okay? So if you think about what I said for the security properties of network flow watermark, one thing is that they should be hard to remove, but another thing is that they should be unlikely to occur. And you can also think of adversarially trying to insert a watermark into flows. If I've got a relay, like the Tor network, and it's got a whole bunch of flows coming into it, and one of them is marked, if it can make all of the flows coming out of it look marked, that's the same as removing the flow, the mark from one of the flows, right? So if you can insert a mark into all the flows, it's just as good as removing a mark from one of the flows. Okay, so in fact, now this is kind of a hard attack to defend against because there's a sort of generic copy attack that you can do where I just record the timing of a flow and then I just impose that timing on every other flow that goes through the network. Okay, but there are also possibility of more efficient attacks, and those should certainly be, for example, attacks that don't involve imposing arbitrary delays. I've got 1 minute. I can get there, though, because I've only got one more slide. So there are also attacks that can be considered where you bound the delays that you allow the relay to insert into the flow. And in our paper, we describe a very efficient and bounded delay attack that lets you copy a swirl mark from one flow to another. And basically, it works by sort of looking at the timing of a flow, which we kind of assume has a swirl mark in it, and using the time, sort of assuming that whenever we see a packet in that flow, that's an interval that should have a packet in the other flow. And we use the same interval insertion algorithm as Swirl uses to insert those packets into those times in this other flow. And here's a heat map that shows that whenever the two flows have approximately the same rate, we can insert the mark from flow A into flow B and the mark from flow B into flow A. Thank you.
Questions for Nick? I know he's standing between you and the reception.
Yeah, everyone wants their booze.
Okay, here's one then. So in the rainbow attack, I didn't see where the warden was selecting the flow.
Actually, the warden only has to know the flow in the rainbow attack.
Okay. In the swirl attack, did he have to select the flow?
Well, yeah, it has. It works best if the flow is uniform.
Okay, good.
So it's not a particularly craftily selected flow.
Right. Anyone else? Okay, let's thank Nick. And that's it.